Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
What is up, Gypsy Gang? We are back for another episode of the Gypsy Tales podcast. This is one of our special Red Bull quarterly report, and this is the last quarterly report for 2023. And SVG joins us in studio. He talks at length about his departure from supercars, his transition to NASCAR full-time in 2024, and all the ways in which he would fix the supercars championships in Australia if he just had a magic wand and he could do whatever he wanted. I had a blast doing these all year. So thanks for everyone who listened and followed the Red Bull Ampol Racing team through the 2023 supercar season. And I'm just stoked to do this one with SVG as well. Good friend of mine and just a good dude in general. He's a very misunderstood fellow, but I can guarantee he's a really, really, really great dude. And I'm very excited for what he has coming up in the next few years in NASCAR. I just love when you see friends kind of reaching their potential, and SVG definitely falls into that category. So that's it from me. A couple messages and then enjoy this one with SVG. Gentlemen, our friends over at Manscaped have been working night and day to bring you a below-the-waist grooming experience like none other than their brand new Performance Package 5.0 Ultra, featuring the Lawnmower 5.0. We're talking about the next generation trimmer with interchangeable blade heads for whatever shave your mind can imagine. Upgrade your grooming game to the Ultrasphere this year by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code GypsyGang. High tech for low places. AI is cool and all, and I get it. But the biggest technological advancement the world has ever seen may well just be in this new Manscaped 5.0 Ultra package. Their fifth generation trimmer features two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. We also have dual LED spotlights to provide contrast on multiple skin tones, three length-setting combs. Oh, and did I mention that it is waterproof as well? Also, inside this package features the Weed Whacker 2.0 ear and nose hair trimmer, crop preserver ball deodorant, crop soother toner, and two free gifts. That is going to be the boxes and the shed travel bag, which I highly recommend. Get all this plus free shipping and 20% off with the code GypsyGang at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code GypsyGang at manscaped.com. I can promise you, you've never seen a ball trimmer look quite this good. Get yours today from our folks at Manscaped. We're also brought to you by the team at Boost Mobile. Boost Mobile isn't just another phone company. They're all about giving you freedom and flexibility with their range of pre-played packages starting at just $10. You get the power to choose. Need unlimited calls and texts? They've got it. Wants heaps of data for streaming and scrolling? Boost plans have you covered. Here's the kicker. They operate on the full Telstra 4G network, ensuring you get reliable coverage wherever you go. No more drop calls or lost connections. It's the network you trust with the plans you love. Ready to make the switch? Well, you just head to boost.com.au to explore their range of plans and check out the latest phone deals. Plus, with Boost's easy activation process, you'll be up and running in no time. Join the Boost Mobile community today by heading to boost.com.au. We're also brought to you by the team at mxstore.com.au, Australia's largest range of parts and accessories, as well as the original glove company and the best glove company. That is, of course, Fist Handwear. You can head to fisthandwear.com and use code GypsyGang for 15% off. And if you go to tropicalauto.com.au and you give Kyle a call, if you're in the market for a new or used vehicle, he is going to make sure you get sorted. They got a range of new and used cars there. So just ask for Kyle and you'll get dialed. That's it from me. Enjoy this awesome episode with the legendary Cody Webb. We are also brought to you by the team at Dixon Quality Australia. You can head to dixonquality.com.au. They're hands down the best flannels in the game, in my opinion. And it is summer now, coming into summer back in Australia. So if you're not into flannels, they do have a bunch of other stuff too. A bunch of boardies, a bunch of other stuff, a bunch of party shirts as well. So dixonquality.com.au for your year-round goodness. We also need to give out a shout-out to Dry Times. There hasn't been much innovation in the humble towel for as long as I can remember, but that is until now. Dry Times may have created the perfect towel with their quick-drying, odor-free, and super absorbent towel. It also takes up a fraction of the space of a traditional one. Dry Times also make the perfect towel for every occasion. They make towels for the gym, the beach, and even ponchos for post-surf, which I absolutely love. To find out more about the perfect towel, head to drytimes.com or check them out on Instagram at drytimes. That's it from me and the ads. Enjoy this episode with the one and only Shane Van Gisbergen. From the gang called Gypsy. Gang and they come and get gypsy. Gang and they come and get gypsy. Gang. I'm at a gypsy gang. I'm at a gypsy. Righto, SVG is in the studio for the final quarterly report of the year. And mate, bit of a send-off. We get to kind of just talk all things V8 and the supercars and the career that you've had. Three-time Bathurst winner now. You've won, I think, everything that there is to win. And then sailing off into the sunset for a new challenge in NASCAR, mate. So first of all, as a friend, congratulations, bro. I'm very happy for you and very proud of you.
Thank you. It's a pretty cool intro. it's been a pretty cool journey here for quite a few years, but the next part's going to be exciting too.
Oh man, it's crazy. Like, I luckily enough got to watch you race at Indy, flew over and got to kind of be a fly on the wall for that, and I was actually just blown away at how many SVG fans you made in one epic race, you know. And you know, like at Indy, it was a few weeks later, and there was a lot of people there in SVG merch. There was the crowd was cheering for you whenever, you know, you were doing the driver intros and stuff like that. So it's pretty wild to think that you've had such an insanely successful career in supercars, and it's like, okay, cool, that's like the halfway mark, and now we're kind of, you get to start this whole journey all over again. It's wild to think.
Yeah, it's huge change, and almost like I'm starting as a rookie again, or I am at the bottom again, but it's a completely different discipline and type of racing. So doing the ovals and only a few road courses a year, it's like starting rallying like I did a couple of years ago, or a whole different sport. So yeah, it's not much relative to what I do now, apart from a couple of times a year where we turn right. So yeah, fully starting again, but I'm looking forward to the challenge. I love learning new skills, I guess, and racing different people and new tracks, understanding how it all works.
Yeah, because I could imagine that it's not like the supercar stuff would ever get easy, but after a while, you're in the same team, you're going to the same tracks, and you're one of the best guys, and it's almost like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And, you know, there's always new challenges, like this year you had a new car and stuff, but, you know, this feels like something very, very challenging and exciting, and it's like you're biting off something pretty massive.
Yeah, supercars never really got stale. Like, it's that's the best thing about motorsport. It's always evolving. Like, you'll have a perfect setup, and then the next year, even if you got similar parts, your setup's completely different. You're always evolving, always trying to get quicker and quicker. And then even this year with the change of cars and stuff, you know, it never got boring here. It was always full of change and always life. But yeah, this is it's an even bigger change, obviously, next year, and a massive challenge. But yeah, that's the best thing about motorsport. No matter what you're doing, every series is always new challenges, new people to race, new teams and cars, stuff like that.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. So when you're in it, like, and just from knowing you and knowing a bunch of other racers and kind of like top tier athletes, you're never really thinking about the achievements and the accolades and what you actually accomplished when you're in the moment, because if you did, you probably wouldn't be achieving those things because you're thinking about stuff that kind of doesn't matter. But after Adelaide, it's your last race for the foreseeable future in a supercar. Have you had much of a chance to kind of reflect on your career and what you're able to achieve?
Yeah, it was, I haven't really, and I don't really know if I will. Like, I try and be in the moment and present. You know, I didn't really know how I was going to feel or react at, you know, putting the helmet on for the last time at Adelaide, or, you know, seeing the guys afterwards or the team party, and had a few mates come over to try and make it special as my last one. They come over from New Zealand, and that was pretty awesome, them surprising me. But I didn't really have any feelings about it. I just suited up, tried to do my best, and, you know, prepared as best as I can, and just went racing. Like, there was no extra emotion or anything. But after the weekend, for sure, settled down a bit, and it's been pretty awesome. But yeah, I don't really look on, you know, I don't even know how many race wins I had or whatever. But obviously, I had three championships in Bathurst and stuff like that, and those stats will be pretty cool and something to look back on in years time. But at the moment, I just now want to add to my NASCAR stats. I don't you know, that's something I think when you're in your rocking chair later on, you'll look at that stuff and think about how you had such a good time, but also reflect on the races that you could have won as well.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, it's cool. Like, I know that you're not the guy that does it. So it's like, I know that it's where your head's at with that stuff. But I mean, yeah, like, I'll say it for you, like, it's this crazy career, dude, like, to do what you did and to come from New Zealand, and so much of it was just like you and your dad, you know, and it's like you guys kind of trying to figure it out and being the underdog from NZ that came over, and you just ended up literally being the man, you know. And it's I think it's a crazy ride to go on, and I know you don't think about it, but it's definitely worth saying.
Yeah, thank you, it's true.
so Bathurst, three-time Bathurst winner, I guess, what does that one feel like?
Yeah, I think that's, it didn't save our year, but it certainly made it more of a success, I guess, when you look back at the year in a whole. We obviously had some tough moments, but still second, and then winning Bathurst was huge, especially the way the week went. I went to that week with a different plan and convinced Andrew, took a bit of convincing for how I wanted to do it, because at Sandown we probably didn't manage it that well, prepping for an endurance race. And then for Bathurst, you know, we just focused on race pace all week, and he was a bit worried how we'd look on the timesheets always being slow. You know, you always want to be up the front every session and going hard, but this car, the way it is and the way the soft tire was at Bathurst, I knew the races was just going to be, you know, we were going to have to be driving around so slowly, so smoothly, just, you know, and the pace was 4 or 5 seconds off what we qualified. So all weekend we were near the bottom of the timesheets, and we'd pop up at the end if we put tyres on, but I knew we were going to be good. Especially every session when we did the race runs, we were fastest or pretty much the fastest car, and I knew that we couldn't get much more fuel in our car from what we started. So, you know, it was just a case of being patient, and as soon as the race started, we were away. You know, we did take the fuel out in qualifying, obviously, and the car was nowhere, but we hadn't worked on the car really for quali. And then in the race, Richie was, he was awesome because he'd just done race runs all weekend as well. And then myself, we were just able to do that constant pace. We knew what the car was going to be like through a stint. And, you know, we were the fastest car all day. And then even in that last stint, we were a little bit heavy. Brock and Brody were sort of catching a little bit before Brock had his issue. But that last stop, we still would have popped out 15 seconds up the road or whatever we did. It was pretty amazing how that day worked. You never normally have a Bathurst without issues. And all day it was seamless. Richie did a good job, and Andrew was just amazing all weekend how he set the car up and ran the race. It worked out really cool.
Man, that must have been a super cool feeling to be kind of like doing victory laps at Bathurst almost.
Yeah, like I've never had a race there where, of the two that I had won previous, where I hadn't been under pressure, and it was actually pretty cool. Like, I obviously stayed focused, but I took it in a bit the last couple of laps, and you know, I knew it might be my last one for a while, and it's pretty freaking hard race to win. Took me a long time. So yeah, that last couple of laps I was just cruising around and enjoying myself, and actually couldn't believe the beer cans, like the amount of beer cans that people have thrown over the fence just sitting beside the track. It's crazy. Yeah, it's funny the things you see. But had a good time, and seeing everyone after, you know, it means so much to everyone. A Bathurst weekend, it's a Bathurst win is one of the best moments or feelings you can get.
Is that going to be something you miss every year? Like, will you be on the couch in the US counting your cash from all your NASCAR wins and being like, damn, I wish I was at Bathurst this weekend?
Yeah, I don't like the week. The week is too much. Like, we get there on a Tuesday and we just do a crazy amount hammered. I don't enjoy that part, but I love the race. I love the race morning, doing the warm-up, checking the car, and then, you know, you do your driver's parade and the atmosphere is starting to build up. And then on the grid with the Jets, like, I love the race day there, but the rest of the week's just hell. But the race, it's a feeling I'll miss, you know. And it's one of my favorite race days.
Was it cool getting to race all the endurance stuff with Richie this year? Because I know the first time we did this, that was something you were talking about where you were like, man, I'm actually excited to get Richie in the car and to kind of work with him on that.
Yeah, 100%. And he's a different person with his racing mindset now than a few years ago, and it was really cool to work with him. We did clash a bit at Sandown with what we wanted from the car and stuff, but at Bathurst it was perfect. He just learned how to drive it, listened to what we said, and then his contributions were really good as well. And in the race he drove amazing, pushed when he needed to. You know, he even drove up to the back of Brody at one point for the lead, and then he just sat there and stayed in his slipstream. It was very impressive what he did and how he approached it. And I'm sure at Groves next year he's going to be pretty strong.
Yeah, yeah. It's got to be a hard balance to walk. I mean, me and Brock were talking about it with J-Dub, you know, where Brock's kind of got to draw the line and be like, right, I get it, but it's my car. Like, I'm the lead driver on this one. But, you know, like, a hard balance to walk at times.
Yeah, exactly. And it was even, I think it was Sandown, he wanted something from the car, and I'm like, yeah, that'd be good over one lap, but we're doing 160, so we need to make the tire live. It's all about that. And, you know, once we got into the race, you know, he was away. He was much better, and his tire life was awesome. I think he learned a bit there, and then at Bathurst as well, his race pace was so much better than Sandown as well. So, yeah, probably taught him a bit much, but at least I don't have to race him next year.
Yeah, that's true, eh? Man, was it hard to see Brock go through what they did there? Like, I mean, he talks about Bathurst like he's had heartbreak at every, you know. I'm like, bro, you've only done a couple. Like, it took you a long time to win it, but you know, you guys win, and then you have to see him in the garage, you know, kind of being as dejected as you would be after that happens at a Bathurst.
Oh, exactly. I've been through that there a couple of times, and yeah, and we were lucky it didn't happen to us. Like, my gear shift tower was broken as well, but seeing Zane and Craigo, what it meant to them and how early they got knocked out, but it still sucked to see that happen. You know, they were fast in their race runs, and then Brock, they were on for a good result. A team 1-2 would have been epic. And seeing how much it means to Brock, you know, it was pretty hard to see. And then, you know, we go to the team dinner and you know, all the super cheap guys are sad, and you know, half our garage is a bit sad, and you know, you kind of feel for them, but we just won Bathurst, you know, so it was a bit mixed emotions. But yeah, you know, most of the guys were pretty happy with the end result.
Yeah, and Brock has plenty more chances.
Oh, exactly, and he's pretty fast at that track now, and he got plenty of years left, I think.
Yeah, well, just to speak on that real quick, like I was going to kind of get into it a bit later, but two young drivers next year for the Red Bull team, and it's crazy to think that Brock at 21 is going to be like the elder statesman of the Red Bull team. Like, what do you think about that dynamic? Like, you'll be on the outside looking in, and you know, you'll see like a really young team, which traditionally that hasn't been how Red Bull has approached racing in Australia.
Yeah, I haven't really thought about it too much now, but it's going to be interesting. Will is a very different personality, but in a good way, and be interesting to see what he brings with, you know, the car direction and stuff, because obviously Erebus have been very strong. So yeah, that'd be interesting to see what he contributes, and then how they work together, and how fast they're going to be. Brock doesn't like getting beaten, and neither should anyone doing what we do, and I'm sure they'll be competitive, but hopefully it's in a good way, and they drive each other up. And yeah, it's obviously Brock's team and Will's joining, I guess, but yeah, they gotta learn to get along quickly and try and, you know, put the team first before getting into a swinging competition with each other, I guess. But yeah, I'm pretty sure Will will be good. He's got a good family around him too. They're good people, and I think the team is in a good place with their two drivers now.
Yeah, because you guys, I think it's the perfect dynamic. I mean, obviously the NASCAR stuff wasn't on the table when you guys first started driving together, but I think it's such a cool dynamic when you get a younger driver that has all of the time in the world and all of the, you know, talent and potential, and then when he's got an older teammate that's literally the man in the series, and you kind of get put into this position of like, all right, I just got to learn off Shane, be better where I can, and then you kind of take on a bit of I guess it's like a really easy dynamic in a sense, like the roles are very much set in place, and then next year you go into the series and it's like, oh yeah, Brock, I've been here a couple of years, you know, I know how the car works, but it's sort of just like, eh. I could see there being like a fight for the top spot in a sense.
Yeah, I can see that too, and that's what happened with Jamie and I, and you know, we did get along well, and we raced hard, but you know, there's only one pit bay and you want to be the first one there, so you get the priority, and Jamie and I used to battle pretty hard, and you know, we probably went over the line a couple of times. I think it was 21 at Townsville and then at Eastern Creek, you know, but Brock and I never really did that. We always raced respectfully and gave room, and there were no desperate moves really on each other. And even though this last year the stacking risk has been worse than ever with the fuel time, it's been a really good dynamic. The engineers got along well, and us drivers, so it's been really cool. But hopefully they can keep that next year, because as you said, it's two young guys trying to be the one. It'll be interesting.
So I guess touching on the 23 season, new cars, you're obviously vocal about it. At the start of the year, people pissed in your cornflakes, basically, and told you that you shouldn't really talk about those kinds of things. But, hey, you're not racing next year, so
yeah.
Do you have any, I guess, less filtered thoughts, or, like, after spending a year with the cars, and, I guess, where are you at on it now?
Yeah, it's a hard one, because you still don't want to, you know, still got a lot of friends obviously next year that have to be in the series and do well, but obviously there's some big personnel or technical shakeups at supercars next year, and so there probably should be. But yeah, I just hope they listen to the drivers really, and let the drivers have some input, but more importantly the fans. You can read everything you read online or talk to people, you know, you need, it's going in the opposite direction, some things from what people want. So hopefully, hopefully it gets better. Hopefully they make the cars a bit more raceable and get rid of the fuel drop and all that kind of stuff. Because at the moment, you look at Adelaide, everyone does the same thing, you know. You race around, you get held up, your tyres get hot, everyone does the minimum fuel, and then you come in for the second one and just do this ridiculously long pit stop. Everyone just does the same thing, and there's no racing, you know. We were promised a car that was more raceable and could drive hard and make mistakes, and, you know, you looked at Bathurst, I didn't drive a lap flat out the whole race. I was driving around 2 seconds off of what I could do, just saving tyres and driving around, and it was probably a boring Bathurst. It was good from my part being out front, but you know, Bathurst always comes alive at the end because everyone's pushing hard on the limit, hitting walls, making mistakes in the marbles. But you know, you had 25 guys and girls driving around there at 50% not making mistakes, and we all just drove around spread out. So hopefully they can make some changes and make the cars raceable, and you got to drive them on the limit. The tyre likes to run at a higher temperature, or there's something you can do with the car to just make it be able to push and follow. Because at the moment, the following is probably worse than last year when you catch someone. The car just cooks and then you're stuck doing whatever the guy's pace is ahead. So, yeah, and I don't know. I think Tim Edwards will be good. I think he'll be a good person to level it out and implement some changes. You know, it sort of looked like the last guys were a bit burnt out or gave up or didn't take criticism very well, and yeah, hopefully Tim's good for the sport. I think he will be.
Yeah, I mean, I personally love Tim. Like, I think he's, and you're if you're around him, you're like, you know, he cares and he's super passionate. Yep. You know, and I think that yeah, and it's hard, I guess, to be on the supercars side of things. It's like, it's, I'm sure there's a lot of moving parts, and I'm sure that it's harder than people think. Yep. But like you said, to listen to drivers, and you know, there's people out there like yourself that have got years of experience in these cars and in the series, and it's like, I feel like you guys probably have a pretty solid idea, you know.
Yeah, it's like, the cars look amazing and the flames and everything, and that became the joke, because that ended up being one of the better things about it. Or so hopefully, you know, they have such an amazing concept. And you know, when you driving the prototype last year, there were some good things about it, and then everyone wanted their own thing, and you know, trying to make an own roll bar system, and you know, the cars would have been better with roll bars, but the system didn't get made in time by one of the teams, so that's the reason it doesn't have roll bars. And that's, you know, they sold the story, oh, it'll be better without roll bars. You know, so just being more open to everyone. And you know, now we got guys under the car during a pit stop getting burnt. One of the guys got burnt laying under the car trying to change a roll bar, you know, stuff like that. So I think just being a bit more transparent would be good.
Yeah. And so if you, let's say you just get given a magic wand and you're like, okay, Giz, here's the wand. You can do 5 things to the cars or to the series on your way out. Just to sprinkle some dust on us. Like, what would you do?
Wow, that's putting me on the spot. First thing I'd do is rebrand it. I'd rebrand it back to V8 supercars.
V8s, yeah, let's go.
Yeah, and then I'd do the wind tunnel testing for parity, which they're doing. Yep. I put a different type of Dunlop on it. You know, Dunlop has been a huge supporter of the series, and you know, they've kept the cost down, but the tires have fallen behind because of it. So I'd put, even if you had to spend a bit more money, you'd make a better tire that could handle the heat, handle some pushing, but then you just give people less of them.
Yeah.
To offset the cost of it, and or just spend more money on tires. They're the most important part of a race car, and they would make the racing much better.
From karting to F1.
Yep, exactly. And then I'll probably get rid of all the fuel drop stuff. You know, they brag about how the engines are so much closer than ever, so why do they put us in a box with the fuel drop? You know, if you could change the start level or change how much you had to put in, you know, you'd bring in fuel saving, trying to have different levels of pit stops, or how many pit stops. I think that would make the racing much better. Is that 4? I don't know about it.
Yeah, let's say 4. Yeah.
Yeah, 4 will do. That's probably the 4 biggest things. And that would you know, those things instantly would make good change, I think.
And I mean, it doesn't sound like crazy stuff, you know.
No,
like
it's
not like you're trying to reinvent the series.
Yeah, I think those are the biggest problem. Dunlop can make good tires, like they kill it in all the tires or all the competitions where it's an open tire. So, you know, the technology is there. We just need to use it.
Yeah, yeah, no, it makes sense. And so, I guess to then zoom out on like your own career and to look back at some of your favorite moments in supercars, like what are some of the things that, and they might not even be victories, maybe it's people, friendships, like, you know, when you kind of look back, what's some of the highlights of being a V8 supercar driver?
Yeah, well, the biggest one, or one of the biggest things, is actually just being that. Like, that was my dream when I was a kid, going out to Pukekohe when I was younger, and it's just what I wanted to be. I wanted to be like Greg Murphy and Jason Richards and Paul Radisich, and getting to do that as my job, I guess, you know, was it's been a dream to be a professional race car driver in V8 supercars. So, yeah, I've
delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
I've had a ball and loved it. But if I had to pick a moment, it would be Pukekohe last year.
Yeah,
to,
really?
The way, the way that last day went. You know, I got pole in the first race and, you know, the car was amazing. And then the second race, I mucked it up. So I thought, oh, that's it. I think we were eighth or ninth. And then, yeah, won the first race and it was a pretty awesome race. I had some battles with Will and Chaz and managed to put them in some good spots and kept myself up front. And then that last race, just how it all fell into place. I thought, oh, we'll just try and get a good result. Hopefully make the podium would be awesome for the last one and maybe get the JR trophy. But yeah, we drove, everything just, you know, fell into place there. And Will had the pit stop problem and then we ran a bit long, came out and yeah, had a good battle with Brock out of the pits and then won that last race with an epic battle with Cam. And then, yeah, just seeing the crowd after I made the pass, the crowd went up and, you know, when I finished the race, Murph was the first guy there and, you know, I did the good skid first and everything. And then just having my family, my friends there, the JR trophy and Andrew Edwards winning that, like he'd worked with JR in the past and he got chosen as the team rep to go up on the podium. And yeah, just seeing how emotional he was, how much that meant to him. Like, yeah, it was one of the coolest days in racing I've ever had by far. It was really cool, and it's a track that it will never happen again at. You know, the track's gone now.
Yeah, man, that is a pretty epic day, and just to be at home, you know, like I think it's sometimes maybe you think, oh, when you're from New Zealand, like New Zealand, Australia, potato, potato, but I mean, you left your family, you left your friends, you left your home to, you know, go and race. So it's like when you do get a chance to do something like that at home in front of your people, your friends, like a place that you spent so much time going, like that is pretty special.
Yeah. And, you know, Murph always used to talk about it, you know, the crowd's worth two tenths, or Nigel Mansell used to say that it's worth half a second. And you know, it's all in your head, I guess, but you do get that lift, you get the motivation.
Oh,
and
for sure.
Yeah, like even passing people, I think I passed Reynolds at the hairpin and we were together and there's a little grandstand on the left. I just saw that because I went to check the mirror and look left, and I just saw that grandstand erupt. Like it was pretty cool. So yeah, and it does spur you on in the moment, and yeah, it's it's a hard feeling to replicate.
Man, it's so cool. And what about rivals in the series? Like who was the hardest dude to beat?
It was both Scotty and Jamie. I think our peak rivalry was, you know, 2017 to end of 2020 when he left. I guess Scotty smoked us in 2019 and 20 a little bit. But yeah, he was, I think we all just pushed ourselves to those next levels, you know. We just kept leapfrogging each other, and Scotty always had us covered in qualifying. His qualifying was insane.
One lap freak.
Yeah, but in racing, we all were pushing so hard, and then, you know, end of 20, Scotty left. End of 21, Jamie was on his way out, and I kind of found myself left at this level by myself, you know, and it was kind of missed being pushed like that for those last couple of years. Like those guys really pushed me, so the rivalry was it was pretty cool, but always friendly. Scotty and I had our moments and niggles, I guess, but always afterwards we were friends, and we always respected each other so much.
Yeah, and you kind of have to have those niggles in a sense. Like it just shows the level at which you care, you know?
Yeah, well, I want to win the championship, so does he, you know, and see when he beats me on the podium, I'm not, you know, I congratulate him, but I'm not happy about it. I want to be the guy up there. So we had some pretty awesome races where I come second and, you know, still enjoyed myself, but yeah, I wanted to beat him and he wanted to beat me.
That is such a sick era. And to do like some of those battles you mentioned early with Jamie, dude, I remember watching those races and just being like, whoa, like I would not want to be in that garage.
Yeah, I just, it was crazy. The Townsville one, the days where we had to take two tyres or three tyres, and obviously three tyres takes 4 seconds longer, but you get the advantage of one front tyre, and Couchy and I thought, oh, well, if they let us take two tyres, we can get the lead and try and keep it. And they said, yeah, you can take two and fight for the win. So I thought, oh, okay. So we were the same speed, you know, we decided to take two tyres, and Jamie took three, and we came out in front. And then I thought, oh, well, I only got to block him for two or three laps, and then his tyre will be cooked and he's got no advantage. So I blocked hard like I would anyone else, but I kept it clean. And then, you know, he bumped me a few times, which he can do. And then the radio started going off saying, oh, you guys can't race, third's catching. You need to give Jamie the lead. And I was like, what? It's, you know, it was daylight third, you know, third was nowhere to be seen. And then eventually his tyre cooked and I pulled away a bit and we were the same speed. I thought, oh, that was a good race. The plan worked well. But then, we got dragged over the coal afterwards, Couchy and I, but it was a bit awkward. But other than that, it was most of the races were pretty good with Jamie.
But to just have two dudes on the same team that are just the highest level, you know, the car's amazing, it's like generations old, and it's just like a free-for-all. You're just like, all right boys, just go do, I don't know, do your thing, you know. That's like a rare scenario in motorsports. Exactly. It's kind of like the dream scenario, but it doesn't happen often.
Yeah, and like he had no weak tracks really when I first joined. Mm. It was every track he was fast at and always at top level. So that's what I had to get better at fast. Like I had tracks where I didn't quite understand how to be quick or wasn't that good at, and he's just good everywhere. It was a pretty impressive level that he was at for so long.
Yeah, and did that help drag you along a little bit in the early days?
Oh, of course it did. And even Craig, like the, you know, first round was Adelaide that we went to, and they drive chalk and cheese, and I was there learning how to drive the car and the setup, and like turn nine at Adelaide, Craig turns in 100 meters before anyone else, it seems like, but they both come out the other side with the same speed, so I was trying to work out which one to drive like or which how to learn to be better in a 888 car. And obviously I tried to choose Jamie because obviously he was the benchmark, but some of the things Craig could do in a car was amazing as well, and how he made a title of driving like he did. It was very impressive. So those first couple of years, I learned a lot off both, but I just tried to emulate what Jamie was doing.
I'm sitting here listening to you talking about it, and man, V8 Supercars has had some fantastic drivers. Like, it really is for it's Australia's a small country, but man, what a crazy cool series when you really zoom out and you really look at, you know, the entire scope of it and how many crazy good drivers we've had. Like, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and a lot could go further now. Like, I hope I've tried to show it with going to GT in Europe, and then also now NASCAR and stuff, and all over the world, all the racing I've done, any of the top 5 or 10 supercar guys could come and do that if they got the opportunity. So hopefully it drags a few more out. You know, we're like anywhere in the world at the top, you're in your own little bubble and you kind of focus on what you got, and hopefully just people expand and go and do some different things and see the world a bit, because it's very easy to stay in supercars all your life, I guess.
And so that's probably a good segue into the NASCAR stuff. I mean, when you first got the call from Trackhouse to go to Chicago, like, where was your head at, and what were your expectations? Like, were you at all wanting to leave supercars, or initially, where was it at before you did that race?
No, so I think it was March at the Grand Prix, or a week after the Grand Prix, where I signed and, you know, knew I was finally going to do the race. We spoke the year before about potentially doing it, and then, I just wanted to go and do the race on an off weekend to go and race something. And yeah, but when we got there, Jess came over with me. We went to Nashville the weekend before, and just got to look at the event and how it all worked, and it was just eye-opening, the level that the teams are at, but how simple everything is. Like, we could walk onto the pit wall and like be a meter or two away from guys doing a pit stop and just watch it. And then, you know, when we're leaving, we walked up to the back straight and just stood right beside the track on the back straight wall, and it was pretty awesome to see. And then just seeing how the world, the way it all works there, and the repetition of the races, and how fun it is. Like, the outlook on racing in America is very different, but when the helmet goes on and it's race time, it's super serious. But yeah, everything else, all the pre-race stuff, is crazy how the entertainment and the show they put on. And yeah, I remembered that from GT stuff. Like, the GT stuff in America was always so much fun, and then the racing was hardcore. But yeah, just the way the American mentality is and mindset on racing, it's very different to what we have down here. And both are good, but it was pretty refreshing going over there, and then obviously winning the race was above what I thought I'd ever achieve. I didn't have any expectations. Obviously hoped to do well and put on a good show. I knew I'd be good because it's a similar car, but they've never ever done a street circuit before, whereas that's what we do all the time here. So I knew I'd be okay, but where I fit in, I had no idea. So obviously winning the race and the exposure and stuff from that was insane. And then the talks about doing more, doing an oval, doing another race, which turned out to be Indy. And I was like, man, maybe I just need to come and do this. And it was a bit weird because I had signed a contract again with Red Bull for one more year at least, and or 888, sorry. And then, yeah, I was just like, oh, the more we thought about it, we're just thinking it was probably a good chance to go and do something else and try and expand.
I mean, it was so cool just to watch the success of the race. So like, you go there and you win the race, obviously, but it was almost what happened after was so cool. Like, I mean, the American fans just loved you. Like, you know, the video of the heel toe going viral, and you know, you just seem like such a breath of fresh air in the NASCAR scene, and you know, everyone welcomed you with open arms. And then to get to go to Indy, and we were cruising around at Indy with you, and just seeing the way that, you know, the fans interacted, and then all of the team personnel, and You're right, man. Like, there was a really, really cool vibe. And I think that that was almost as exciting as, you know, that first race win is, like, just how well received it was. You know, like, a lot of people, yep. you could go into a series and people would just be like, nah, you know, we don't really want you here. But there was such a, like, a welcoming vibe that, you know, that was cool to see in itself.
Yeah, and I guess, like, the team mentality is very different with Trackhouse, how... You know, the atmosphere they put on, the leadership from Justin is very different to any other team I've ever been a part of. But I think just more like the media side and, you know, the way that the team said about how it's going to work, how Project 91 is, I just felt like I could be myself, you know, and just be open about everything. Whereas here, like, you get judged for everything. Like, you qualify 12th, it's a headline, you say something, you know, and it becomes a headline on Speed Cafe or whatever, which is cool. They're just doing their thing. But, you know, and there's probably things in this thing that that we're doing here that people will take out and make headlines of. But you just have to be always thinking about what you're saying and say the right thing, because you get judged so harshly here. And
yeah.
everyone's willing to knock you down or spin the negative of everything. Whereas over there, it just seems like a different... A little bit different mentality. You can say what you want, and every week there's so many stories that come out of a NASCAR weekend, but it's just it's a mix of everything, good, bad, indifferent. If it's a shit race, they say that and try and fix it, whereas if it's a good race, they just spin all the good stories. Whereas here there's just a lot of negativity and trying to find that soundbite just to get the clicks, and so you're always scared of that. Whereas over there, I just felt like, yeah, I could be myself, and I think people saw that, and the response I got from people was awesome from all the fans and everything.
Yeah, and it's so true, man. It is such a shame the way that, I guess, it is at home, because it's like, I just don't think, and we've spoke about it a million times, but it's like, I just don't think that the media understands that you can be cool. Like, just be cool. And you, like... The same people that will complain that you will give them nothing on a race. Like, people will be like, oh, how could you ever get Giz to do the podcast? He hates doing it. I'm like, well, I don't know that he hates talking. I think he just hates you guys, you know? It's like, it seems like a very simple message that those guys could listen to. It's like, hey, just be cool. Like, we don't need to make shit out of literally everything, and it's everything, like there's so many cool stories, and these guys are really cool people, but yeah, everyone's too scared to do anything now. And I bet you see it in a lot of different sports, but I think you're right, like in NASCAR they seem to have found a certain balance when it comes to that. And you know, you can, I guess, yeah, see the response that people had.
Yeah, it's definitely different. And I think F1's the same as well. Like, they have, you know, they obviously have a few bad races that are snoozers, and but there's always a story every week, and they, you know, they always find some good out of it to keep building it up. So hopefully that can start happening here. Yeah.
Yeah, can translate. So then you do the race at Indy. I don't think many people know how sick you were. Is that, like, something you just didn't really talk about? Or, like, is that... Because we can cut it out of this if it's not something you wanted to talk about.
Yeah,
I don't
know. Yeah, I was pretty sick that morning. Like, I don't know, like, why.
Really sick?
Yeah. Yeah, I woke up real bad and couldn't drink anything. I think I woke up at 4 and just started spewing and didn't feel really good and thought, oh, we need to put the media stuff off. And they said, oh, we kind of need to do it. So tried to go to the track, but, yeah, I couldn't handle my breakfast, tried to have a coffee, and that comes straight back up. And then, yeah, just went to the medical center and got on the, got a bit of help there, which from the medical stuff, which was good. And yeah, I was able to do the race, but certainly wasn't at my best. But yeah, I don't know how much better I would have been if I was 100%, but yeah, I was pretty drained. I don't know. I don't think it was the best place we all went for dinner the night before, but yeah, I was pretty sick.
But Sonelmo after the race was really awesome. Great. Yeah. I wish we went there the first night.
Yeah, that was it was a pretty good steak.
That was unreal. We're actually only just talking about that the other day. But I mean, yeah, you still performed awesome. I think you probably got the most out of the car that you could. Like, I think that there was probably, like, I think you were just, you drove that car that weekend on that track to its potential.
Yeah, I probably gave the wrong feedback there as well after qualifying, looking at, because my teammate Daniel was on a little different setup and he qualified second or third, and I probably just went, oh, we got to go to that a bit too much. But our way was probably going to be better in the race, and we just reacted to that a bit wrong. But we had a frayed throttle cable as well, so when I'd click on the or just start pressing the throttle, it'd be like a click, and just go over that frayed bit and then go from 0 to 10 instead of 0 to 5 or something. And
just keep, so you didn't have like modulation.
No, it just kept barking it up into wheel spin, which wasn't too bad, but it was inconsistent, so that cost us a little bit. But you know, I still had some awesome racing with Kyle Larson and Christopher Bell, like we did at Chicago, but unfortunately it was for 8th to 10th instead of top three. But yeah, like I think the potential was still there, but a little bit of inexperience on my part trying to get the wrong thing out of the car, you know. But yeah, I think still fighting those guys up the front. It was a pretty cool pace at the start, and yeah, once we settled in, I think on the sheet we were 4th or 5th fastest, but I just lost too much time at the start in bad spots and not being aggressive enough.
Yeah. So what's the, now that you've done a couple of races, what's comparable, what's not comparable? You know, like, do you kind of have, I guess, expectations based on those two races this year? Like, where's your head at on that front?
No, I don't think they're very comparable. All the driving stuff is quite different, how they achieve speed and how you have to drive it, the way the tire is. And yeah, I think they're very different in that regard. But yeah, the ovals are just going to be the biggest learning part, like, you know, learning in all the small cars, how it all works, and how to push, how to get people's respect, and when to push back, stuff like that, and just learn the flow of the race, and mainly the routine of the lifestyle, like racing every week, getting back to the shop. I don't know
the debrief.
No, not that. I don't know what the debrief stuff is, what the prep stuff's like, sim stuff, training, you know, diet. There's so many things to learn. It's going to be a massive change, and yeah, I'm kind of just keeping my thoughts open about it all and no expectations. Just want to get there, settle in, learn the routine and the people who I'm working with, and yeah, just get a good support network around me. And then by the time we go racing, just, you know, I just want to feel like I belong there and just get ingrained in that lifestyle.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's super exciting. Like, it's such a cool, I don't know, it's just so cool to see the level that you've kind of got to, you know. And it's like you did come through the domestic series, and then, you know, I guess we've kind of seen it with Scotty, and you know, there's obviously been guys in the past, but it's just really cool to watch the progression and that stepping stone. And you know, you think about being a young kid going from New Zealand to Australia full time in V8 supercars and like the learning curve that you had to go through, and you're figuring out life as well as being a racing car driver. And it's, I don't know, it's almost like this is the second time that you're doing it, but you're a full-blown adult. You know, like, you've kind of,
it's much
got
harder going
so
to America though. Like, New Zealand's easy, or New Zealand and Australia's easy, but going there with the visa, the driver's license, social security number and bank accounts, like, it's all a major, and you can't get one thing without the other. So it's going to take us a little bit to get used to and understand how it all works there. And everything is, it's, you know, it's an English speaking country, but it may as well not be. It's so different in some ways how it all works. But yeah, hopefully it's not too difficult to adjust.
Well, I think, if I can do it, you can definitely do it. But I guess from the racing car driver perspective, like, you're a fully fledged racing car driver that's got experience in all these different series, and you've raced all over the world. So it's like, back in the day, you kind of had all that stuff to deal with, like, not as big of a jump, but being so fresh to just being a professional racing car driver. So it's like, I'm sure you've got so much experience that, you know, if you could go back and restart your V8 supercar career again, like how much easier it would be just purely based on the knowledge you have of being a race car driver.
Yeah, but that's life in general, isn't it? You wish you could go back and do things different or know what you knew now or whatever it is. So yeah, but that's part of life, and that's what I'm excited about, is just learning and getting those new experiences and skills, like learning what it takes to drive around Texas or Homestead on the Highline and stuff like that. Just trying to understand something new and then just have some fun. Like, you know, I'm still having fun off the track this year, and still, you know, that's what it's all about for me. I just want to be enjoying what I'm doing and go to the track every week with a smile on my face, and that's what it'll be. Instead of 12 times a year, hopefully, or I think I might be doing, you know, 35 races or something. It's going to be a huge change, but one I'm looking forward to.
That's so sick. So how, like, now when you knew that you were doing it and that switch, I guess, was made, like, is there any training and stuff you can do in Oz to kind of get prepared for NASCAR? Like, is there any sim stuff that helps, or is it so different that you kind of can't really prepare to you there?
Yeah, it's just simulator stuff. Like, there's a lot of technique and driving and being comfortable. When you see a NASCAR driver, the wheel's always in their lap, it looks like, and it just looks silly to watch on TV. But when you drive the car and you're in there for so long turning left and sitting against the G-forces of the banking and everything, I found out why they sit like that pretty quick. You know, it's you're just stronger muscles and in a more comfortable position. So when I got there, I moved the wheel away, put a smaller one on,
and tried to do it
my way, and it's quite different. But on the street it was good, but in the truck, yeah, I need that big wheel and on my lap. So yeah, it's quite different. And you know, you learn to understand what you're seeing on TV and why it works. And when you see those crashes at Daytona or whatever, that, you know, you come out of the last corner and they end up on the front straight, or you think, shit, that went for a while. But when you get there and look at it, it's like, Jesus, that's like 500 meters from there to there. They've been crashing for that long. But you see the speed that they're going at, you know, it's 300 Ks or 200 mile an hour. It's pretty impressive how fast things are happening and how quick you're reacting and how you know, alert you have to be to what's going on. So and then of course you got someone in your ear the whole time spotting you, telling what's around you. It's very different to what I'm used to.
Man, I remember the first time I went to Daytona, and you drive across, like, they kind of, to get onto the track, you kind of drive across the actual oval. I could not believe it. It was out of control. It's like the world's largest supercross berm made out of concrete.
Yeah, and even I've done the Daytona 24 five times now, and every time you're on the banking, it's a cool feeling. And I just always go up to the wall one lap just for a laugh, and you sit up there and you just look up so high. Yeah, it's a crazy feeling how banked it all is. So going at, you know, an extra 50 Ks or whatever the NASCARs will be doing to that, it's going to be bit of an experience, especially with 30 other dudes around you.
Oh man, it's gonna be sick. So what's the roadmap, like, in terms of racing year, and like the season, and yeah, like, yep, you're aiming for 35 races.
Yeah, so next year the season starts in February, it ends start of November. So I kind of know what I'm doing, but not fully confirmed or announced yet. But I'll end up hopefully doing 30 races or even 40 if I get enough mixed classes, but it'll be mainly in the Xfinity series, but a lot of cup races and maybe some truck stuff too. So just experiencing everything, going to all the tracks, and even, you know, the weekends where I'm not racing or not racing cup, I'll just be there learning and being a part of the team and watching all the strategies and pit stops, be in all the meetings, understand what's going on. So yeah, it's just a experience year, so I'm ready for hopefully 25 when I'm in the cup series full time. I'm ready to go and understand what's happening every week. So yeah, next year plenty of racing, but mainly learning.
Yeah, and I guess that's probably something that you enjoy as well, right? Like, it's such a big part of being a race car driver. Like, if you want to be at the top level, it's so much more than just wheeling the car.
You can't just jump in and drive. Like, I guess you got to be prepared, you got to know what lap laps you're pitting, what the car's going to react like, what you need to change if it's loose or tight, understeer or oversteer. I got to change my terminology there, but you have to, yeah, just have that communication with your crew chief and understand what you're in for, and then, you know, what to look for and how hard to push, what part of the race. And then, of course, in the NASCAR, you got the stages where they have the breaks halfway or third and second third of the races, and then the green-white checkers at the end where they extend the race into overtime and stuff like that. So it's very different race dynamic to what we have here, where we basically just go flat out the whole time.
Yeah, and so the move with Ronald, have you got all that sorted? Do you get taking the big unit over?
Yeah, he's sorted to go over in the new year, and yeah, it'd be good to have the dog over there and be a bit of a shock for him going into winter. But yeah, we found a place that's sort of good to go for us, furnished, and got a backyard. No one has fences in America, is what I've found.
I know, yeah. It's crazy.
When I asked about it, there was a pretty simple response. It's, we have guns. So that's why they don't have fences. But so very different. But it's good. Got him a place for the backyard, and yeah, it'd be fun to take him over.
That's so good. How was the New Zealand trip this year? I obviously didn't make it, but I saw some content from it. Looked unreal.
Yeah, that was good. That was kind of my send-off, I guess, and good to just race with the mates again, catch up with everyone, and then, of course, we had the paddock race, so it's good fun. The most fun's preparing them and spending... I had a Ford AU this time, and it's the only thing I could get last minute, so we got it the week of the race, and... yeah, stripped it out. I think we took 300 kilos out of it and prepared it for the race.
That's so insane, eh?
Yeah, and it was a lot of fun. I think we had 26 or 28 cars, and it was a bit of a rain out in the mud. But, yeah, we had a blast and just raced around, got covered in crap, and then just left the cars there afterward.
Yeah. Dude, that's so good. I still need to get there for one of them.
Yeah, well, we're going to do another, so we'll try and do it every year, we think. So that was our fourth one now, and yeah, it gets more competitive and more serious every year, but still so much fun.
Dude, yeah, that would be so much fun. So what's the, you're just in a bit of like an off-season kind of period now, like just trying to wrap up everything, or you're going to be in Oz until you come over, or?
Yeah, so all finished here racing-wise. We got our work Triple Eight Christmas party next week, so that'd be cool to go to and see everyone there, and then mid-December we go over to America, and then going to UK for Christmas with Jess's family, and then back to America and start preparing, really. And I think pretty much first couple of days of January the boys are back at the race shop, and yeah, start going in there and familiarizing myself and getting the routine of it all, and yeah, start learning what I'm in for.
Yeah, dude, that's so sick. I'm so pumped that, it's all happening. Well, mate, thanks very much for doing this. It was, pretty cool way to end our quarterly reports with, obviously, three-time Bathurst winner now, and then heading off into the big old world of NASCAR and dragging,
I
think, every V8 supercar fan in Australia along for your NASCAR ride, so.
Yeah, hopefully. It was pretty cool after Chicago and Indy having all the Ford fans as well, or a lot of Ford fans say nice things and say they watch the race. So yeah, hopefully it's like when Marcus went over, people from this side of the world just all keep supporting, and yeah, but I'll still be watching all the races here when I can, and yeah, hoping that the team goes good.
Yeah, awesome, dude. Well, yeah, and hopefully we can get to a Supercross together as well. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, that sounds good. I'm keen for that.
All right, sweet, mate. Well, thank you very much for this fourth and final quarterly report for this year, mate.
Thank you. Cheers, everyone.